Today on The Journey.
We are always dependent on God. And whatever we have, He gave to us. Whatever gift we're using that may get the applause, He gave to us. And we've got to go back and say, God, it's all from You. It's all for You. It's all to You.
There are hidden aspects to sinful pride. They lurk around the edges of our lives, concealing the arrogance that we condemn in others. Do you want to see what they look like? Well, in this program, Ron Moore and men's minister Tun Chilkin turn on the light of God's Word so that, in the seeing, we can expose the attitudes of darkness in our souls. Also, we're offering for a gift of any amount Ron's booklet titled, A Biblical View of Sexuality. Its scriptural references and relevant instructions celebrate God's gift of sex and encourages its proper use. You can get yours when you call 724-731-2018. Your gift today will help further this ministry of developing followers of Jesus Christ. Now here's Ron to introduce his guest host for a discussion of A Man and His Temptations, Pride, on The Journey.
I want to thank you for joining us today on The Journey. We're involved in a series focusing on the real issues for real men. Joining me to discuss these issues is Tun Chilkin, pastor of men's ministry at the Bible Chapel, a sought-after speaker around the country. Tun, you played football 14 seasons,
yes.
13 with the Steelers, a year with the Green Bay Packers. We're going to talk today about pride. Yeah. Now, when I think about pride, here you are. You're a football player, all-pro. Never invited me to go with you to
Hawaii.
Yeah, I'm a little bitter about
that. We couldn't afford to take anybody to Hawaii when I was making. Today, you could take your whole family.
Okay, yeah. Well, too bad for us you didn't play.
That's right.
You're at the top of your game.
Right.
You're a Steeler. Everyone in Pittsburgh, I mean, they know who you are. You walk into a restaurant, there's Tun Chilkin. Right. How do you deal with the pride issue?
Yeah, you know, Chuck Noll, my old head coach, used to say, if you fall in love with your own clippings, he said, you're in for a big fall. And I think that was a great message for me. And one of the things that I thought was very helpful to me, I mean, I think that, you know, when we see pride really act out, it is very unattractive. And yet when we see humility, we are very attracted to that. And I want to say that early in my football career, I saw humility modeled. And believe me, that doesn't mean that I didn't have pride or that I wasn't struggling with pride. I just knew that it was inappropriate to show pride.
Yeah.
So you start working on hiding that. And it is something. Because where is integrity in what you do end and pride begin? And, you know, it's easy to say, well, I'm not prideful. But during my career, I worked really hard. And I wanted to be the best. And I wanted to be the best offensive tackle that I could be. I'd never told anybody back then. I go, oh no, the Pro Bowl's not important. Well, but that was a lie. it was important. And so there was this constant battle that we deal with as competitors of doing a job well and of working hard. And it was like the lurking monster in the back of my mind. Because although I could fool you, I knew you were very proud. I was an egomaniac, but I could hear those voices. I could sense the pride well up in me. Say if someone talked about another offensive tackles in my brain, outwardly I'd say, oh yeah, he's a great player. In my brain, I'd go, I'm better than him. Yeah. You know, that pride was a constant battle because let's face it, we celebrate success. We absolutely celebrate success. And that is one of the driving forces of why we want to be good at whatever it is we do. I don't care if you're an executive. I don't care if you're a mechanic. I don't care what you do. You want to be the best at what you do. But I think what started happening to me is as I started reading the Word and I started growing in Christ, I realized that there was a part of me that really wasn't humble. As much as I threw that out there, the humility out there, I knew that there was this beast lurking within me that I needed to be careful of and not let out. Now, that makes me sound kind of evil, doesn't it?
But the beast lurking within.
Well, you know, when you speak, you always speak so poetically. I thought I would throw something that was kind of the beast that lurks within. It sure sounded good, didn't it?
C.S. Lewis-ish. Yeah,
that's right. I was kind of, you know, someone's going, is he a werewolf?
So there's a struggle going on within each of us, right? The beast that lurks within.
The beast that lurks within. That's going to be a sermon series. You watch. That's going to be a sermon series coming up.
The beast that lurks within. So we know we're not perfect unless we're arguing our case. We're sure the other person is wrong.
Right.
We know we're not perfect until we need to forgive someone. Mm. And then why should we forgive? I love C.S. Lewis. He said, forgiveness is a lovely idea until you have to actually do it.
Yeah.
We know we can't always be right.
Right.
Except when we feel like we're always right.
Right.
We know we have some flaws until someone else points them out.
Right.
And then we respond like, who do you think you are? Because, okay, you saw that flaw in me. Well, let me tell you the 10 that you have in you. Pride shows up in so many different ways. Now, there's some people, and we know that. I mean, they're just arrogant and they're pompous, and you can spot it from a mile away, and it's ugly. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about some ways that the beast that lurks within, some of those things.
You like that, don't you? Like you're going to that.
I can't let that go.
That's good,
some things that we might not see right off the bat as pride, but they really are. Mm-hmm. Defensiveness.
Yeah.
You know, some people will never back down, even when the facts are piled high against them. They are not wrong. They are defensive.
Yeah, and it's easy to be, you know, especially if it's something that you've worked at and it hasn't turned out the way you thought and people have brought that to your attention. There is this kind of like, wait a second, you don't understand. Somehow we equate the rightness of what we're doing based on how much effort we've put into it, mm-hmm. even if it is wrong. And I think it's easy to become defensive in that way.
And who are you to tell me? Who are you to point that out? Envy. Why don't I have what that person has? You know, I deserve it as much as they do. I tell you, this is something I struggle with even in ministry. You know, you pick up a leadership magazine and here's a church that they're on the cover and all these things are going on, or some guy writes a book and you say, are you kidding me? I could have done a better job writing this book. I deserve it as much as they do.
Right.
Envy is that thing that we always want what the other person has.
Right. You know, I do a NFL talk show every day here in Pittsburgh from 10 to 12 with my good buddy Craig Wolfley. And you know where that real pride comes out is when the ratings come out. And if our ratings aren't what I thought they should be, and you look at your competitor and you go, well, wait a second, we do a better show than those guys. Yeah, it's easy to fall in that track. That pride comes out. Hey, we're doing a great job. Instead of just saying, hey, look, we did our best, and maybe we're really not the best show in town. Maybe we're really not the best show between 10 and 12.
With social media, you got a whole other set of things.
Right.
How many people are following you on Twitter?
Luckily, I don't got to worry about that. I'm not twitting, that's for sure.
You'll never twit.
No,
I can promise you that. You might tweet, but you'll never twit. So, Facebook.
Right.
Facebook friends. So social media adds another dimension of possibility for envy. Okay, here's one. Materialism.
Right.
Often, pride is that tangible thing. It's the car I drive. Mm-hmm. It's the shoes I wear. It's the house I live in. It's, you know, whatever. Self-identity, we talked about identity, a man and his identity in an earlier segment. It can be tied up in where you live and what you drive.
Cars and houses. That seems to be one of those areas. And then toys. I had a buddy of mine who used to have a t-shirt, he who dies with the most toys wins. And he had great toys. And, you know, he had wave runners and a houseboat and three-wheelers and dirt bikes. And I really liked hanging out with him. But he was actually a good friend. But it was a status symbol. And so we can really get tied up in that. A lot of guys get off on very cool cars, whether it's a foreign sports car or hopped-up American-made car. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. In the NFL, I've been noticing that over the last few years, just hanging out with the guys and doing my radio show and TV shows, the classic cars, the muscle cars of your day and my day, they are big. These guys have a 68 Chevelle SS, Cutlass 442. All these kind of cars have come back, and then that becomes kind of an area of competition with these guys. Who's got the cool, hot muscle car of the 60s and the 70s?
Well, I used to be into cars, but then I found out you couldn't have sex with a car.
Okay, you brought that on. Okay, so we have to. Well, all right, so here's that. Let me explain it. All right, so I'm doing a thing. I'm teaching on a Wednesday night through every man's battle. And one of the guys comes, and I'm talking about how bouncing your eyes is important, how you know, that really as men, as husbands, that we should not even look at another woman, at an attractive woman. We should just, as soon as we see him, turn away. And a guy, and one of the guys in my class comes up and says to me, "Touch, now tell me, what is the, I mean, aren't you a little obsessive about this? Aren't you a little legalistic about this?" And he goes, "Well, really, what's the difference between me looking at a beautiful car and admiring it and looking at a beautiful woman and admiring her?" And I, and the first thing that came to my mind, I said, "Well, you can't have sex with a car." And what my point was, before this guy, my co-host here, has been busting on me ever since I said that, is that it is a short sequence of thoughts that goes from looking at a beautiful woman to what you might be doing, to fantasy. All right. Yeah, so if you can bust my chops, you better like explain it at least.
Glad you explained it.
People are going to go, "Hey, who is that guy that was on with Ron? What a weird guy he is."
We recorded that yesterday, and I got up this morning to engage in my addiction of running. And the first thing I thought about, you can't have sex with the car.
That's profound. That was a very profound. Yeah, that's going to show up in a sermon too, I think, at some point.
The beast within.
The beast within. Oh, you're killing me.
Okay, pride, position. What's the first question men always ask each other? Or, you know what? This is a tough one. Even when I try not to.
You do it.
Down the line, you say, "Now, what do you do for a living?"
Well, okay, now, so I think that's a great point, because sometimes you do it. I think sometimes you run out of things to say, so what do? You know, I mean, it's not always about that.
Unless when whatever they say, you say, "Oh, that's pretty cool," or, "Oh, yeah, I'm a little better than you are because my job seems a little..."
Well, I always feel inferior because I know you do TV and radio when you have no other marketable skills, you know, so I go, "Hey, what do? I'm going to do TV and radio." But it's kind of funny you said that. I mean, you know, just once again, I'm going to use the football environment that, you know, Super Bowls and Pro Bowls have a huge effect on the hierarchy. You know, like when you go to the Pro Bowl, there's this kind of this thing going on, and guys that have been to the most Pro Bowls, I want to say there's a status that comes with it. And I don't think all guys take advantage of it. You know, some guys are pretty humble about it, but then some guys do. And so it's kind of very interesting to see that play out in that environment.
So even at that high level of professionalism in sport, there's always another.
There's another model. Elitism. There's the next level. You know, there's this elitism, you know, you're in the NFL, and then there's this next level of elitism when you're at the Pro Bowl. And then there's this, how many Pro Bowls have you been? And then you retire, and some girl says, "Who did you used to be?"
Yeah.
Well, when they ask, she asks you for your autograph.
Why did they have you sign autographs? And
why are you signing autographs?
Here's one that I see in church, and this is a subtle one, but this is really pride. People will say, "You know what? I serve in this ministry. No one ever sees me. You know, no one really serves like me. I work behind the scenes. You know, those guys, they're up front. They get all the back slaps when it's over with. But you know, my service is just to the Lord, and no one puts the amount of time I do into it and all the energy I do. No one serves like me."
No, you know what? The pride is a danger within the church, and there are so many opportunities to do that. And one of the things that I really want to be careful of is because we are up front and we do teach and we do lead, and my emotion wants those attaboys, but that there's this other part of my brain that doesn't want the attaboys, I'm disappointed in myself because I still crave that, right? Mm-hmm. So I was talking to my leadership team, and we had a new guy to our leadership team, and he was very affirming. And I said, "You know, buddy, don't do that to me, because I crave that anyways. I don't want to crave it. I don't like that about myself. I wish I didn't have it." And he said, "Well, what should I say if you share a good message?" I said, "How about you didn't stink?" And so that's kind of now part of our love language, is when someone does say, "Hey, man, you didn't stink." And so so it's been a really interesting kind of way that we relate to one another.
It is amazing how insidious pride is.
Yeah.
Because even when we're serving the Lord, it can become a huge issue in our hearts. I think I told this story in another segment, but I'll repeat it because never stopped me before repeating it.
Yeah, good illustration is a good illustration.
I read the story about Ironside. He was a pastor in Chicago, and he was having trouble with with pride mm-hmm. and humility. And so he thought, okay, what's the most humbling thing I can do? So in that day, people would wear sandwich boards over them to advertise things. And they would walk out in the streets of Chicago advertising things. So he said, okay, I can't think of anything more humbling than that. So he put a sandwich board on. He walked around downtown Chicago advertising church services. And he wrote later that he worked for a while, and then he became very proud that he was willing to be so humble. You know, the insidious nature.
And it's really interesting that, and we need to make sure that we don't have this kind of this false sense of humility, because just because I owe shucks it, if somebody says that we're really not proud. You know, I'm not letting anyone know that's garbage. You know your heart, you know, and when feelings of pride well up inside you, it's not like I don't know that it exists. Mm-hmm. And so that's why, that's why I said it's kind of the beast within, because I'm constantly battling. I don't want to think that way. I don't want to be that way. I would love to be free from that.
Yeah. So, yeah, to go back and say very out front, the pride exists in us.
Oh, yeah.
It's how we deal with it.
Right, right.
That is the spiritual battle.
Yeah.
First John says, lust of the eye, mm-hmm. the lust of the flesh, and the boastful pride of life mm-hmm. is not from God, but from the world.
Right.
We can talk about all the, full-out pride and then the envy and then materialism and position and all that. But Tunch, the worst form of pride is just straight-out disobedience to God,
right.
Isn't it? It's looking God in the eye and saying, I don't care what your word says. I don't care what your instructions. I don't really care how much you love me. I don't care that you sent your son to die for me. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Right.
I'm going to do it when I want to do it. I'm going to be happy. I don't care what you say. I'm going to do what I want to do.
Yeah, and I know what that pride is like, Ron. That was the pride that I was living in. That I, I didn't want to be obedient. I didn't want God. I didn't want God. I'm okay on my own. You know, I'm doing this just fine. And we talk about pride. Obviously, I was born in Istanbul, Turkey. I'm Turkish. We're a very prideful culture. My dad was a very proud man, and I grew up with that, with that fierce pride, and I can do this, and I picked myself up on my own bootstraps, and I always kind of joke, I come to this country with nothing to play American football, and there is a huge source of pride in that, and if you grow up in that kind of that prideful culture in that that environment, I saw my dad and his father get into an argument, and their pride did not allow them to ever reconcile. So my dad left Turkey. Part of his anger, he was angry at my father, my grandfather. My grandfather was angry at him. He left, and my father never talked to him again, and his father died. And that was the first time that I ever saw my dad weep. I had to have been about 11 years old, and he had just gotten the news that his father died. And I heard him on the phone talking to his mother, and he was just weeping and weeping. And you know my dad, and you have ministered to my father. And my father, till the Lord took him home, he wept over that estrangement from his dad. He dreamt about it, in that it never left him. It really just never left him. And it almost, that pride that he had, and really the pride that I had as well, almost did not allow us to come to Christ. Mm-hmm. Because it says that what I believe my whole life is wrong. If I believe this, then, and I don't want to believe that, because I want to believe that I'm right, because I thought rightly, and my life of origin was right. And it is until we, really become broken before Christ. And for a man that is really, really proud, being broken before Christ is one of the hardest things to deal with.
So pride can cause us to lose fellowship with God. It can cause us to lose fellowship with other people. And, I was thinking, we want to challenge our kids to do well. We want them to have the right sense of
right.
pride in themselves.
Right.
But we never want them to get away from the truth that we are always dependent on God. We are never independent of Him. And whatever we have, He gave to us. Whatever gift we're using that may get the applause, He gave to us. And we've got to go back and say, God, it's all from You. It's all for You. It's all to You, even as I struggle.
Right,
with
right.
With this sin of pride.
Yeah, but what did Paul say? Why do you boast? What do you have that wasn't given to you? Right, amen. It's you know, even, you know, during, you know, when I really came to grips with that, I was talking to a guy about dealing with my pride as a player. And, you know, I came to this realization that I played in the National Football League, and that is a gift. Mm-hmm. That is a gift from God. He gave me the size and the strength and the speed and the ability. And even when I want to say, but boy, I sure worked hard, God gave me the desire to work hard.
Yeah.
And when I said, well, I was always in great shape, so I very rarely got hurt. Well, the Lord protected me. It is all grace. It is all of God. It is nothing of me. And whether it's playing football or whether it's a job I have or ministry, it is all a gift of God. It is all grace. It is nothing that I deserve. It is something that God has given me.
Well, you're listening to The Journey, and we appreciate you joining us today. We've talked today about some real issues for real men. Today, we've talked about pride. Next time, we're going to talk about anger. And we ask you to come back and join us again on The Journey.
And please stay with us. Ron and Tunch return in a few moments with a preview of our next broadcast. You know, it doesn't take a long look to see how sex-saturated our culture has become. Whether in television shows and movies, on billboards, or at the mall, one thing is certain. Our society doesn't hesitate to put sexuality and sexual topics right in front of us. But where is the church in this discussion? Far too often, Christians remain uncomfortably silent about sexuality. Parents are reluctant to talk to their kids about purity. Men and women, who desperately need accountability, keep their sexual struggles to themselves. And churches often avoid these difficult issues entirely. But because God created us and created sex as part of the human experience, we must talk about this vital topic. We need to know what God has to say about it and how we can apply those truths to our lives. To that end, Ron has written a thoughtful booklet called A Biblical View of Sexuality. It's yours for a gift of any amount when you visit ronmoore.org. Again, that web address is ronmoore.org. Or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. Now, here are Ron and Tunch with a look at our next time together.
What makes this such a dangerous emotion is anger not only comes up from the things that happen to us today, but an emotion can arise from something that happened in the past,
right,
just like that. And we're angry about something that happened 30 years ago.
Oh, you know, Ron, that is so true. I can go back to a coach that I had been wronged by 30 years ago. And I can get right back to that point. And for me, normally the anger stems from pride, that I feel that I was disrespected. I feel that my pride was injured. And I want to go back there. You know, even a game that I might have played bad, or a guy that cheap shotted me and I let it go and I didn't retaliate, and I was looking for another opportunity and that opportunity never came. Or a coach that I felt might have humiliated me in front of other players and dressed me down. And I can go back to that point and relive it all over again and feel the anger rising up inside me.
Well, I played baseball, small college, and when I was trying to get a scholarship to play, I played American Legion team. And I'll never forget, I was playing, you know, in baseball, you can get hot and you can go in slumps. And so I was having a great time. Batting average was good the whole bit. And this coach benched me for whatever reason and would never tell me. And I went and talked to him and tried to approach it. And when I think about that issue, these many, many, many years later, I still like to go punch that guy. I mean, the anger comes back. And it scares me that something that happened, and I could tell some stories that didn't happen so long ago. We both have some coaches.
Anger is one of my, I've got a lot of them.
But it's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. How fast it can come by.
We hope you can join us for that discussion next time. Also, we want you to have a copy of Ron's insightful booklet titled A Biblical View of Sexuality. It's yours for a gift of any amount, and you'll find it at ronmoore.org. That's ronmoore.org. Or you may call 724-731-2018. That's 724-731-2018. Plus, we invite you to have a look at our church website at biblechapel.org. There you'll find information about our worship services and special events, along with Ron Moore's recent sermons, devotional thoughts, and podcasts. Again, that address is biblechapel.org, biblechapel.org. And if the journey has made a difference in your spiritual life, won't you invite your friends and family to listen as well? We'll thank you, and we think they will too. Thanks for listening, and we invite you to join Ron and Tunch next time as we walk together on The Journey.